before us today, House Bill 392, and that's it. Representative Ulmer, if you could join us.
Let it be noted that I provided the quorum.
Yes, not the first time either.
That's right. Right. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, Mr. Quorum Maker. House Bill 392 makes some amendments to the Uniform Probate Code. The purpose of the amendments is to simplify it from a consumer's perspective and avoid having to have certain securities and accounts and banks have to go through probate. The idea is to avoid costly lawyer's fees. And I know that sounds like a strange thing coming from a retired attorney, but I think there is a real interest in making these types of transfers as simple as possible and least expensive as possible. This bill was brought to my attention by Art Peterson, who has served on the Uniform Probate Code Committee. He is with us today, and what I would like to do, Mr. Chairman, is step aside and let Art come and walk you through the bill very quickly and then answer any questions that you might have.
Great. Art, give you a second.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I'm Art Peterson, now in private practice with the juvenile law firm of Dillon and Finley. I am still a uniform law commissioner for Alaska and am appearing in that capacity. I support Representative Ulmer's House Bill 392. It is aimed at two things. One, simply keeping Alaska's Uniform Probate Code up to date. The National Conference of Commissioners on Uniform State Laws, which promulgated the original probate code and these amendments, is urging states to keep up with the enactments of the amendments. So that's point one. Point two, it just makes good substantive sense. It's for the benefit of Alaskans. It would help them simplify and, in fact, avoid the delay and expense of probate proceedings. I have sent you a letter, Mr. Chairman. I don't know whether copies have been put in the packets of committee members yet, but basically, I would call your attention to the fourth paragraph of that letter, which sets out in a nutshell what the bill does. Current Alaska law provides for the rights of survivorship on the death of a party to a multiple person account with a pay on death clause. House Bill 392 does two things. It improves the current provisions, reorganizes, simplifies, etc., adds language for the deposit accounts that will include single party accounts. So a single individual can have his deposit in the bank and in that single account specify the pay on death beneficiary. The second thing the bill does, it adds that kind of provision for securities, stocks and bonds, that kind of property that an individual might own. So in those two regards, bank deposits and stocks, a person can, by simply designating this beneficiary, including a pay on death clause or a transfer on death clause, accomplish his intent, and the bank or the stock issuing entity or the brokerage house can then rely on that contract, give the money or give the stock, the ownership, to this named beneficiary. There are more complicated details in it, but that's the gist of it. Questions of survivors to a multiple party account, survivors when there's a case of multiple beneficiaries and so on. The bill deals with that. The bill includes protections for the bank who pays in accordance with this contract. It includes protections for the brokerage house that pays in accordance with its brokerage contract. So the pot holders, the money holders, the contract holders are not at risk. Representative Ulmer, I think, mentioned to at least the chairman that representative of the banking industry has sent copies of the bill and some backup material to his clients. We haven't heard from them yet. but I can't imagine that there would be any opposition from them. So while this is primarily a consumer-oriented bill, simplifying probate, in fact avoiding probate, it also has protections for the other entities affected by it, i.e. the banks, or the brokerage houses, or the stock issuing entities. I don't know that I need to take you through the bill section by section. Attached to the letter I sent you is a four-page summary from the Uniform Law Commissioners. I've highlighted a few key sentences in that summary, and that should help, I believe. It's a fairly involved subject, not a real spicy one, and I don't really want to bore you with too much testimony, but I would be happy to try to answer any questions you might have. Again, reminding you, it's for the benefit of the relatively little property owner, helping people implement their intent and avoid the cost and delay of probate.
Thank you, Art. Any questions from any members, Robin?
Yeah, I can certainly understand protecting the banks and the various brokerage houses and other people handling the issuance of stock transfers. I guess my concern is, where do we protect the spouse or the rightful heir? For example, I'm an old duffer living in the Pioneer home over in Sitka. I haven't got a will. I have a wife estranged living in some other state. I have maybe three or four children, all adults. Because they're only charging me a flat amount per month and I'm receiving a retirement, my retirement account continues to grow. It's a cash account sitting in a bank. I put payable on my death to Cutesy Susie, my friend and receptionist who worked for me for the last 3 years. Now, how does my wife and my and or my children ever receive or receive any protection on that if in fact the bank is going to be authorized immediately to pay over to her? She then takes the money, of course, and she's in Albuquerque the next day. How do you track it down?
Mr. Chairman, instead of the spouse or other survivor going after the bank, it would go after the other person who received this, whether she's gone off to Albuquerque or wherever. There is provision in the bill indicating that this bill does not affect the rights among the survivors, among the heirs, etc. This is between the potholder and the person who is named as the beneficiary in this pay on death clause. The bill is aimed at assuring the both the validity and the efficiency of the pay on death clause. If there's a creditor, for example, the creditor can make a claim. If the pay on death designee has already received the money from the bank is out of the picture, the creditor goes after the pay on death designee.
He'll never know. Nobody's ever going to know this because it doesn't have to be noticed in the newspaper or published. I mean, you're a creditor in Juneau. Robin Taylor, sitting in the Pioneer home, old fuddy-duddy that I am, I dropped dead. Are you taking the Sitka newspaper and are going to know from the obituaries that I just dropped dead and I still owe you $20,000? And then when you do find this out, some months later, my dear friend Fran wanders in, said, did you hear we had a celebration, Taylor died. No. And you find out about it, you're too late at this point. She's already adios with the money. She bought herself a new Cadillac and tap dancing lessons in Albuquerque, and it's gone. Now, what are you going to do?
But that's no different from the current law.
Sure it is. Current law, money can't leave my bank account and be transferred to someone without public notice being given and a judge having the opportunity to review that.
Well, where is that public notice given? The same Sitka Sentinel. There's no requirement that it be published outside of wherever you might happen to be residing or die. So
it's given four different times.
Three, I think.
No, four times.
Let me interject here so I can understand this. In the scenario that Representative Taylor's describing, wouldn't, what about if the creditor is already attempting to get the money? I mean, it seems like, to make that realistic, most creditors aren't going to be waiting for you to die. They're going to have a lien on your various assets in the first place. And wouldn't the disposition, I mean, if someone owes you money, they're going to be after it, right, whether you're dead or alive, and those liens would exist. I'm just trying to clarify this for my own understanding here of what really goes on. Representative Taylor?
No, that's the sad part. They don't. I mean, most people, I mean, yeah, it's an old debt, been hanging around for a long time, and I'm a little tougher sick. Yeah, you probably should have moved on a lot sooner, dude. But let's say it's a younger guy, and he just went and bought two brand new outboards from you, the outboard dealer, and he just spent $26,000. Gave you about $5,000 down. He still owes you $21,000. He goes out here, he wrecks the boat, he doesn't have insurance, and his body's lost. Somebody looks at his account and says, well, gee, we're going to transfer his permanent or his limited entry fund thing. No creditor can attach that. That Bristol Bay permit was worth $200,000+. That bill is free and clear. Now we're going to transfer each one of his accounts. Poof, they go. Where does the creditor have any rights, or any other family members or spouse has any rights? Only if they're protected by probate. And the sad thing is, I support what she's trying to do. I'm just trying to find a way so that we don't. I mean, is there a monetary amount in here that we cannot exceed more than, at least, so that all we're talking about is maybe the $10,000, $15,000, $20,000 situation?
There is provision in Section 215 that deals with the rights of creditors and others. And basically, if the estate assets are insufficient, a transfer resulting from the right of survivorship or POD designation is not effective against the estate. So you have the person dead that entitles the bank to pay this beneficiary. However, you have the person dead and you're still giving the probate notice that you're talking about for the regular probate proceedings. Now, if his account is so lopsided, or his estate is so lopsided that all of his estate is in this, either, let's say it's a deposit account, let's put in cash, and there's nothing left, then this would be applied. The rest of the estate is insufficient, and the transfer resulting from the POD designation is not effective against the estate. So the creditor then would still be able to go after that same pot of money.
How does that help anybody? Because if the creditor can, in fact, go against,
it helps all the cases when there's no creditor.
And the estate, yeah, I understand it helps everybody when there's no creditor, but basically when there's no creditor, you don't really need the help except for getting the thing out of probate without having to go through advertising and paying a bunch of fees. Yeah, but anytime there's a creditor, or a wife, she's got certain rights.
Yeah. If the bulk of the estate is in this deposit account, and that goes to the designee. At the same time, the notice of the death is published. The creditor is getting that notice and has the right under Section 215 against the estate, and the transfer resulting from the POD designation is not effective. So, as I understood your question just a moment ago,
you said effective?
Pardon?
Transfers then not effective?
But it's occurred. Right.
But it's occurred.
Then a surviving party who receives payment from an account after death is liable to account to the personal representative of the decedent for proportionate share of the amount received, etc. That's in subsection B of 215.
The money's gone by then.
Yeah, but it says, and only do they have to, you love this line, is liable to account to the personal representative of the decedent for a proportionate share of the amount received, to which the decedent immediately before death was beneficially entitled under Alaska statute, to the extent necessary to discharge the claims and allowances described in subsection A remaining unpaid after application of the decedent's estate. Proceeding to assert liability may not be commenced unless the personal representative has received a written demand by the surviving spouse, a creditor, a child, or a person acting for a child of the deceased. The proceeding must be commenced within 1 year after death of the deceased.
Wow.
I mean, I applaud what you're trying to do, but I can see very easily where you could set up your estate with the intent of disinheriting your spouse and your children, you can disinherit anyhow. We all know that. But you can't get around the rights of that spouse currently. This thing does. All I got to do is put it in a liquid form, 3 or 4 different accounts, put my girlfriend's name on it, and I'll guarantee you, the day I'm gone, she's got the whole thing, and she's gone out of town. No rights, no forced right of share, no forced right of anything on behalf of the spouse.
Representative, let me have Representative Parnell interject a comment, then we'll go back to our...
So I believe Representative just hit the juggler for the entire thing, and that was my very first question as I finally went through it. And the only solution that came to mind, and it ties it back up again, is that within the parameters of last will and testament, written last will and testament, that it's within those parameters, and then if it's beyond that, and everything in the last will and testament is there and not contested, then you could probably execute it. But I really would hesitate for a spouse who has put 10, 20, 30, 50 years of their life into this person's life, and then... You use the most obvious example of dispersal to somebody else for contestation. It would seem to me that you need to provide a forum for the people who have poured their lives into each other first to have first claim on that, and that this couldn't just all of a sudden disappear and vanish. And I understand the tying up and the kids not getting the money and some of that other. It really seems, you know, at least from the material I've got, it really seems to be a major, major switch. How things are being done. So I just don't know. I'm listening, but I wanted to know that I kind of really had an uneasy feeling when I started going through it. I have a lot of panned questions alongside it, which I'll get answered as this goes along. I know that's the main one that I had.
If, Tavar, you could just sort of lay out again, as briefly as you can, the difference on this issue comparing the existing law to the effect under this bill.
Under the existing Article 6, and that is in our current AS 1331, the pay on death provisions apply only in the case of multiple party accounts, and it's only deposit accounts, cash accounts. The bill does two things. It expands that to single party accounts for the cash part, and it adds comparable provisions with regard to investment securities, stocks and bonds, and brokerage accounts, and so on. It merely implements what is already the policy in Alaska. It doesn't change that basic approach of what we now have in Article 6, but merely expands it to cover these other kinds of accounts and property. And although I was introduced as a member of the committee that drafted this, not the committee that drafted it, but I am on the Uniform Law Conference, of which a committee drafted, but I was not on the drafting committee, so I am not as intimately familiar with the bill as some others might be. And what I would like to do in response to the question that's been raised about creditors and spouses and so on is call the fellow at the University of Georgia, who's nationally known as the father of the Uniform Probate Code, Professor Wellman, and get his response to that, because it's the sort of question that I'm sure was fully debated in the drafting committee. It's not something that's going to be overlooked as they got from zero to here. So I would like to find out what their comments on that are, and the fact that I don't know the most persuasive answer should not be held against Representative Ulmer's bill, because I believe that there are sufficient protections. They've tried to protect everybody involved and simply make it more efficient for the actual property owner. And I'm sure they wouldn't have overlooked the interest of the spouse, because the general policy of the National Conference in various areas is indeed to protect the interest of the spouse. And in fact, in the revision of Article 2, of the Uniform Probate Code, which is also being proposed to the legislature, they have specific improvements in the rights of the spouses to collect upon death of their dead spouse. So it's not something they'd overlook.
Any answer you get, if you could write it, turn in the form of a brief letter to the committee, that'd be very helpful.
Sure.
I was just going to make a suggestion along those lines, Art. That's my primary concern. is that these designations of transfer, either on death or transfer, payment on death or transfer on death, we could have some saving clause thrown into this thing that basically said, if the transfer would comply with the intestate succession laws of the state of Alaska, were they to be applied to it, then the transfer is done. Because my fear is, we designate an amount, and we run through another inflationary spiral, and the amount isn't going to mean anything again, you know. And if we try to say, well, any amount upon which you pay taxes maybe would have to be transferred. Well, God, right now that's about $600,000 in the state of Alaska before taxes apply. I'm afraid of those arbitrary kind of things. Whereas if we set up a savings clause in here that said a guy could transfer upon his death his automobile, his right to receive his permanent dividend fund for the year, his savings account, his checking account, and all of his stocks. And maybe all he wrote on the bottom of each of those little things, because I'm assuming that the companies are going to put a little box at the bottom or something. And the little box at the bottom says, what do you want done? It says payment on death or transfer on death. And he puts down one half to my spouse, one half to my kids, Joni, French, Susie, Joe. Well, that would be in complete compliance, as far as I know, with the intestate succession laws in the state of Alaska. Should he die without a will, that's how it would go anyhow. Unless the children, of course, were of the... Well, in other words, he could get away with that. Now, if he did something else, let's assume we've got this clause in here, and instead he goes, all of my money and all of my assets to my dog. My wife gets nothing, or to the some society for the prevention of cruelty to animals or something. My wife gets nothing. That certainly would not fit with the intestate succession laws of the state of Alaska. And whoever made the transfer would be liable for knowing whether or not it fit. Now, your banks and your stock folks probably aren't going to be too happy about that. But all it would take would be a letter from an attorney, their attorney, indicating, no, this is a valid thing. From the information you've given me, it's okay to make this transfer. That may not be good enough, but there may be a way to do that. Could you comment on that, or have somebody look at that? Or?
I would be surprised, Mr. Chairman, Wellman and the others involved in the actual drafting of this do not have a ready answer already on the books, either in other provisions of the probate code that assure the result that you're concerned about, or something in here that, in my reading of it, I've just blipped at the moment.
Well, that's my fear, too, is that I've done the same thing. I'm thinking there's got to be something in here that works as a savings clause, but I don't know what it is.
Mr. Chairman, if we could ask Representative Ulmer or her assistant, Diane, if they remember anything specifically on that in the bill.
Any further questions for Art? We appreciate your joining us today, Art. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Art, you're just doing this because as a uniform commissioner, you're not representing anybody else.
Okay. Thank you, Art. Appreciate your taking time today.
Thank you.
It appears there's no more witnesses on this bill. Anyone else want to say anything today?
Matthias and two witnesses.
We'll hold it over till a week from today, and if Art, you can get that to us, that will be helpful. Any other business come before the committee today?
I'd like to move the. Did
you
have that bill last year on
Cedar Tyson? That's
where I removed
those.
Oh,
danger.
Thank you very much. Good thing I got you.